I'm Bob Main. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 336 of A Practical Show done by a practical guy, and that is me, your host. This week is part two of the series that's probably about a 3 or 4 podcast series. I might throw a fifth one in there. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how I'm able to get the point across here in the next couple of episodes. But for all of you who are relatively new to concealed carry, even if you just like to recreational shoot, even if you like to just competition shoot, or you're a self-defense with a firearm junkie like me, even if you're new at doing this, these next few podcasts are geared towards you. So last week I talked about really why, and what do I mean when I say I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop? And what does it mean to you when you carry a gun, and why should you do that? I laid out some facts last week that hopefully got you thinking. This week I want to talk about picking the right gun. Now, this is a controversial topic, but you know, I'm really no stranger to picking controversial topics. I like to do that on this show because I really believe in getting people thinking. So as I cruise in the Handgun World mobile studio, cruising down Interstate 10 right now, I want to talk to you about picking the right gun. I mentioned it's a tough subject. And, you know, it's been debated for years. You know, I mean, this argument, as I've talked about, this argument can start bar fights. You know, just all you got to do is walk into a bar and say, hey, you know, I think the perfect gun, the right gun's a 1911. And you are going to get some agreement and you are going to get some pushback. And obviously that is just a rhetorical point that I'm making. But you know what? Of course, I would not suggest that you walk into a tavern and say that, but you know, all you got to do is get on the internet and start a thread. Which one is the right gun? A 1911, a Glock, an XD, an M&P, a Ruger, you know, SR9, a 40 caliber M&P, a SIG, and oh my goodness. You want to talk about getting responses. Now, I'm not going to say that you're going to get good responses, but boy, you can sure get a debate going. But let me just throw this out there because, again, some of you are new, and maybe some of you are just now listening to me for the first or second time. All handguns suck. Oh, wow, did he just say that? You know? Yeah, go ahead and tap the person on the shoulder that turned you onto this podcast and ask him, hey, did that Bob Main guy just say that all handguns suck? Yeah. Yeah, he said that. Here's what I mean. If you study ballistics testing, and unless you have a bad case of insomnia, I would suggest that you really not do a lot of studying of ballistics testing. So instead of putting you to sleep, let me just go ahead and let you know right now. You'll find that most handgun bullets have about the same stopping power. Oh, did I just say that? Yes, I just said that. All handgun bullets have about the same stopping power. Bob, what about that 45? What about that 40 caliber? I just said that all handgun rounds have about the same stopping power. They all suck. Compare them to a rifle or a shotgun, and they don't do well at all. They just simply don't. And that's what I mean by that statement. Compare a handgun to a rifle or a shotgun, and they just don't perform very well. Did you know that over 80% of people shot with a handgun live? Huh? Did you know that? In case you didn't, yeah, I'm here to tell you. And if you want to listen to my podcast episodes from a few years back, I interviewed an emergency room doctor and an emergency room nurse that are used to seeing people come into the ER to get treatment for handgun wounds. And one of the most startling things that I learned in interviewing those people was this. Most of the time, the ER doctor or the nurse cannot tell what caliber that a person was shot with until they recover the bullet. And sometimes, even then, they can't tell. So what they're saying is, based on the size of the wound, based on the severity of the wound caused by the handgun round, doctors can't tell what they've been shot with. So the notion that a .45 is going to take someone's arm off, or that a 9mm is way too weak to do anything but piss the bad guy off, folks, that's just not true. That makes for good internet chatter, and it makes for good argument for people who are living back in the 70s and 80s. But that's about it. Let me share this with you, folks. Bullet designs are the best they have ever been, period. Bullet and ammunition designs are the best there's ever been. And if you really want to take a close look at this, the difference between 9mm and 45, the size of the bullet difference is only about 2 millimeters. Okay? That's it. 2 millimeters. That's it. Yes, most 45 bullets will weigh twice as much as a 9mm bullet, but hey, you know what? Physics is physics. You can't change physics. The 9mm bullet flies faster. What does that mean? It usually has better penetration, or it's got a bigger transfer of kinetic energy. Oh boy, now I'm starting to use these big confusing terms, and I'm supposed to be talking to people who are new at this. So I will not use big confusing terms. But if you don't believe me, talk to somebody who really knows what they're talking about. Don't talk to people who think they know what they're talking about. Talk to people who have studied this, or get on YouTube, or get some books, get some really good books on ballistics. And like I said, if you can't sleep one night, just open up that ballistics book and start reading, and sweet dreams. Anyway, which one of these is better? Well, I'll tell you what's better. I'm going to tell you not to, first of all, get caught up in caliber decisions. What's better is the one you can shoot well. That's what's better. The one that you can shoot well, that you can be accurate with, that you will practice with, and that you can buy easily. Now, right now, today, September 8th, at least this segment of the podcast, I'm dictating on September 8th, 2015. Right now, the ammunition market is real good. It's very healthy. In other words, it's a buyer's market right now. It's back to being a buyer's market again. Ammunition's not very hard to find, even 22. I stopped at my local gun shop, the favorite one that I like to go to, Sparks Firearms in San Antonio, Texas. And they had tons of .22 ammo on the shelf. It was great to see. Yes, .22 caliber. And no, by the way, .22 caliber is not acceptable for self-defense. And I'll explain a little bit later. So even though that might be one that's easy to shoot and you can shoot accurately, that's not acceptable. All handguns suck, but some suck a lot worse than others when it comes to self-defense, and that's one of them. But having said that, bad guys have been stopped with 22s and 44 Magnums and pretty much just about everything in between. Now, the size of the ammunition is really not that big of a deal. The millimeter size, the bullet weight and all that. It just really isn't. They're handguns. Let's all not forget, they are handguns. If you really want to have some serious stopping power, pull out a rifle. Just about any center fire rifle. Okay, pull out a shotgun. Just about any shotgun. 20 gauge, 16 gauge, 12 gauge. Just about any popular rifle today. You know, 223, which is the typical round that an AR-15 shoots. An AK. An SKS. A 30-06. A 308. Whatever. That, now you're talking some serious stopping power. You know, now you're talking about some serious power. But when it comes to a handgun, you know, they're just handguns. But they're so easy to carry and so easy to conceal and so easy to, you know, have when you really, really, really need it. That's why handguns are so popular. Okay, and I'd be dishonest if I didn't tell you that. Okay, but some you know, some people buy a small gun just because it's easier to carry. And even, you know, men and women, both, they like to buy, they're enamored with these small little guns, these small little handguns. So let's talk about the size of the gun. The size of the gun. I want to bust a myth right now. I want to bust a myth that beginners need a small gun. Beginners do not need a small gun. Okay. Way too often women are easily persuaded to buy a small gun. Generally, most ladies don't study firearms as much as men do. And that's just a fact. Hey, can I speak the truth here? Most of them. I'm not saying all. There are no absolutes in something like this when it comes to firearms. And not all, but most ladies just don't quite study the subject. And so what happens is they get a gun store clerk, and that gun store clerk is typically a guy. Then the guy talks the woman into buying a small gun. And nothing drives me nuttier or more crazy than somebody that is trying to do that and sell a female on getting a small gun if she's the kind of woman that just has never shot a gun very much before. Here's why it's a bad idea. Physics, folks, physics. Small guns are harder to shoot. Now, sometimes people are told that they're little and convenient and easy to use, but nothing could be further from the truth. A small gun is typically going to kick more. A small gun is going to be harder to shoot more accurately for people that don't have a lot of training. Okay, there's a thing called sight radius, and what that means is the difference between the rear sight and the front sight. And that sight radius is very, very short on a small gun. It is longer, obviously, on a big gun. It's easier to be more accurate with a longer sight radius and a longer barreled gun, usually, than it is with a small barreled gun or a small sight radius. So these little guns are really for people who are well trained, that know what they're doing, and too often they fall into the hands of beginners. And a couple of weeks ago when I did that beginners class for Nelson in San Antonio, I had three or four ladies in that class that had never shot a gun before. And I spent 2 hours with them, and at the end of the 2 hours I let them shoot a big gun. Well, not a big gun, but a decent sized gun, a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm, a service-sized handgun, which a service-sized handgun means, you know, a gun that typically a police officer would use in the line of duty in performing his service. And then I let them shoot a small gun, like a little 9mm or even a real tiny 380. And I asked them which one they liked best. They all picked the large Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm pistol. That was their favorite gun to shoot. Now, might not be their favorite gun to carry. Some of them were interested in carrying and some were not. So some of them probably will try to get something smaller, a little bit smaller for carry. But it's not a bad idea if you're thinking about getting a gun. If your budget can afford it, it's not a bad idea to get two guns. At first, when you first get a handgun, get the largest handgun that you can effectively handle and get a caliber that you can handle. And please, please, please do yourself a favor. Go to a shooting range that rents firearms. Go to a shooting range that rents guns. Preferably one that rents a lot of handguns. And try them before you buy anything. Okay? How many of you go to buy a car without test driving it? Probably not many. It's not a very good idea. You have the opportunity to go test drive guns. Go do it. And rental fees are not that much. Usually for anywhere between $15 and $25 plus the cost of ammunition and, of course, the cost of your range rental, I mean your lane rental, that's usually about what it'll cost you to rent a handgun. And then most ranges will give you a discount if you rent more than one. So it's not that much money, and that's money well spent. It's far more economical to rent guns, several of them, and find what you really like. It's much more economical to do that than it is to buy something you don't like and then have to try to get rid of it later after you got all this money invested in it. Okay, the other downside about small guns is when they're really hard for people to shoot, it typically means they don't want to practice with it, and then when the time really comes where they really need it, they haven't practiced, they mess something up, and then their gun is of no use to them because they didn't practice and train with it. Think about that. So the little guns give you the ability to carry and hide them easily, but you might want to make a little gun your second gun, not your first gun. Okay? That's a trade-off, but it's one that I'm not willing to make very often. And that trade-off is carrying a little gun. Okay? Rule of thumb, a good rule of thumb, carry the biggest gun that you can comfortably carry and comfortably shoot and be accurate with it. And you know, my view on this is a little bit different than a lot of other so-called experts. And maybe that's because I look at it from an everyday guy's perspective. Okay? But even a little gun is better than no gun. So when you do get to the point to where you can effectively shoot and you can train yourself, then get a small gun and practice with it and learn to shoot it. I think it's better than no gun. A lot of experts will disagree with me. You know, a lot of experts, they may not disagree that it's better than no gun. I think because that's kind of a no-brainer. I mean, you know, a little gun's better than no gun. But, you know, so many of these, quote, experts, unquote, still live in the old days, and they come up with this crap like, you got to carry a gun with a decent caliber, like something that starts with a 4, like a 40 or a 44 or a 45, you know, because it'll take their arm off and all that other stuff. Yeah, right. You can find all kinds of stories about people that were hit with a 45 that didn't stop on the first, second, third, or even fourth round shot. Okay? And you can find lots of stories about people that were hit with a 9mm and 380 and stopped on the first shot. Again, our goal here is to stop. Just to get them to stop. Get the bad guy to stop what it is that he or she is doing. I don't advocate killing. I don't talk about killing. I talk about stopping. And, I don't want to ever see anybody die unless God decides it's time for them to come home. I don't want to see them die. Okay? I would like to see them stop. doing what they're doing that made me pull my gun on them in the first place. Okay, that's what this is all about. And that's what I advocate. So time for a quick break, and I'll be right back.
Whenever you see big city mayors campaigning for gun control, rows of uneasy-looking police officers are forced to stand behind the mayors. The reason our police friends are uneasy is they don't buy into the mayor's political scam. The president of the Black Police Caucus said his members believe there should be no gun rationing, and nearly 100% of their membership thinks criminals are able to obtain guns through illegal means. Likewise, 94% of the National Association of the Chiefs of Police believe that citizens should be able to purchase firearms for self-defense and sporting purposes. Maybe this is why billionaire New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg called the 32,000 member Fraternal Order of Police a fringe group, because unlike Michael, cops know who the good guys are, namely you, not Bloomberg. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, back with you. Since I was talking about small guns, for those of you that are just now looking around, you're going to start seeing some names out there of some guns, and I'll throw some of them out there and tell you which ones that I've seen new shooters do fairly well with and which ones I haven't. You'll see Ruger LCP. You'll see that name. You'll see those guns everywhere, all over the place. They're little tiny 380s, and you know they're pretty tough to shoot. So I know they're small and easy to pocket and things like that, but they're pretty tough to shoot. You'll see all kinds of small little revolvers. You'll see little Smith & Wesson revolvers. You'll see some little Taurus revolvers. You'll see little Ruger revolvers that are a little bit bigger than some of the Smith & Wessons, but not much. You'll see other small little guns that are made by Car Arms. That's spelled K-A-H-R. You'll see little Taurus guns. You'll see little Kel-Tec 380s. Let me think. What else will you see out there? Those are a lot of the popular ones. And like I'm saying, those are pretty hard to shoot. They're pretty difficult. You'll see a Glock 42, which is a 380 caliber, and I got to tell you what, that is really nice to shoot, but it's a little bit bigger. It's a little bit bigger than a lot of pocket 380s that you see out there. But if you can effectively conceal a Glock 32, I would say that is a fantastic beginner's gun. However, the 380 ammo is a little bit more expensive than 9mm. Now, you'll also see small 9mm guns. You'll see small guns like a Glock 43 or a Taurus, I think it's called the TCP-9 or something like that, little Taurus 9mm. You'll see small little Car Arms 9mm guns. A lot of these are pretty difficult to shoot for a new person. The one that's, there's actually two in particular that are pretty easy to shoot. And one of them is the Smith & Wesson 9mm Shield. That is a very, very... And everything I'm talking about, I've tested. I've tested quite a bit. And the Smith & Wesson 9mm Shield is... I've seen a lot of new people do real well with that gun. Smith & Wesson has designed it, and they've designed it nicely where it's got low recoil. It does shoot a 9mm cartridge. It fits just about anybody's hand. It's very easy to shoot. I would highly recommend that you get the version that has no thumb safety, because, again, a new person should not have to be worried about disengaging a thumb safety. That's just my opinion. The trigger pull is not too hard, but it's hard enough to where if you're using the most important safety that exists, the safety that's between your two ears, Yes, that's the most important safety, is the one that's between your two ears. If you're using that safety, the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield is a nice gun and a safe gun. You'll also see small little 1911 45s. In other words, when I say 1911, that's the type of gun that it is, for those of you that might not know. You know, long story, it was adopted by the U.S. military in 1911, which is why they call it that. Yeah, it's an old-fashioned gun, but here comes the hate emails. I'm not going to trash it too much. And there's nothing wrong with the 1911. 1911s are fine that's being owned by the right person. Again, a 1911 is fine that's being owned by the right person. I do not recommend 1911s for new shooters for various reasons, and if people want to get angry with me on that, well, then go ahead and get angry with me on that. I didn't say I don't recommend 1911s for self-defense and concealed carry. I said I don't recommend 1911s for new shooters. Let me just make sure that I clarify that point. But they're very difficult to shoot in the little 3-inch version 45s. They can be hard to shoot, and boy, they can kick a lot, and they can be really, really loud. I would stay away from real small 40 caliber guns. Okay, so if you're new, stay away from a small 40 caliber gun. Even a large full-size or even mid-size 40 caliber gun is hard enough for some people to shoot. When you shrink that gun down to a small size, it's ridiculously hard to shoot. And, of course, anything chambered, anything that's a 45 caliber that's real small is just going to be really hard for new people to shoot. I'm speaking from experience here. I'm definitely not making this stuff up. I've just seen a lot of new shooters. I've seen a lot of new shooters at training classes that I've either been involved with or training classes that I've taught. I've seen a lot of new shooters at competition matches, and I've seen what guns that they're able to handle and which ones that they're not able to handle. You know, and it's just really difficult for a lot of them to handle some of these small guns in any caliber. Okay, there might be a few others that I'm going to talk about that are on my not recommended list. But let's talk about what's on my recommended list. Again, I am very fond of the Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm handgun for new shooters, or a Glock 17, or a Glock 19, or a Springfield XD 9mm, or a Ruger. Ruger has their SR series, SR 9. I'd recommend a full-size SR9 for a full for a new shooter. Note that what I'm talking about are a lot of 9mm guns. There are also some 380 guns out there, 380 caliber guns that I would recommend for new shooters. A Glock 42 is one of them. A Car Arms, and I think it's called a CT380 or a C380. Not their little super small size 380s, but they got one that's a little bit larger than that, and I think it's like a C380 or a CT380. Check my show notes at handgunworld.com and I'll put a link to it. That is a very easy and very soft shooting handgun. If you really insist on a 1911 gun, a 1911 style gun, a 1911 chambered in 9mm are pretty easy for new shooters to handle. As long as you can train yourself to get the proper grip and depress that thumb safety, again, which I don't recommend, but if that has to be your style of gun, I would recommend it for new shooters in 9mm. Plus, the great thing about 9mm ammo is it's probably the cheapest ammo you can buy. When I say cheap, I don't mean low quality. I mean low cost. You can still get some very high-quality ammunition at a low cost in 9mm. Another small 9mm that isn't too bad for new shooters would be the new Ruger LC9 Pro. The LC9 Pro. And don't let the word pro throw you off. It's not for professional shooters. Not quite sure why Ruger named it that. But it's got a real nice trigger. It's doesn't have a tremendous amount of recoil, but still I would stick with... I really like the mid-size guns, like a Glock 19, a Smith & Wesson M&P 9, or even an M&P 9 compact, the Springfield 9mm guns with a 4-inch barrel, the Ruger guns with a 4-inch barrel. Most people know, if they've been listening to me long enough, my preferred carry gun is a Glock 19 or a Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm. What's great about these guns is they can also double as a home defense gun very nicely, very easily. But I'm often found carrying a Shield, a Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm, a Carr PM9, or a Glock 43, which are smaller guns. You know, with a good holster and a good belt, these guns are very comfortable, and they'll get the job done if you need to use it. Now, I'll cover more on that a little bit later. But one thing that a new shooter also, in my opinion, needs to pay attention to is recoil. As you get better, recoil is not going to be a big deal to you. But in the beginning, recoil turns a lot of people off when people are getting started with their shooting career. It turns a lot of people off. And again, it makes them not want to practice with their gun. Another gun you might want to consider if you're a new shooter is a decent-sized revolver and chambered in 38 Special. So a decent-sized 38 Special revolver. And when I say decent-sized, not one of these little small, commonly called snub-nose revolvers, not one of these pocketable revolvers. I'm talking about one with a 3, preferably a 4-inch barrel revolver that's probably going to be an all-steel gun that's got some weight to it in 38 Special. Might be a little bit harder to conceal, I get that, and you might want to make a compromise. You might want to get something like a Ruger or Smith & Wesson with a 3-inch barrel that is not a small, tiny, tiny revolver, but get one that is kind of like a medium-sized revolver. And 38 Special is pretty comfortable to shoot in a gun like that. Now, even 38 Specials can really be horrible to shoot in tiny little revolvers, which is, again, why I don't recommend them. Something that doesn't get talked about much, but there are people out there that buy revolvers in other smaller calibers, but calibers that are decent, like a 327. You know, and those are very rare, and it's very hard to find ammo, but, you know, they shoot pretty well. But stick with something where ammo's easy to find and it doesn't cost much. And a lot of people are really tempted to get a big old 357 Magnum revolver, right? And let me tell you what. Unless you've got a really big heavy revolver, a 357 Magnum is just not going to be very fun to shoot, especially the real lightweight versions. Now, I do want to get basic here because, again, I'm talking to new people. Some guns hold more ammunition than others. You're going to hear some terms out there called, and one of them you're going to hear is a double stack gun. What does that mean? That means that basically the ammo is in the magazine and it's doubly stacked. In other words, the ammo is in there side by side. That's how they get 15 or 17, or in some cases even more. That's how they get that much ammunition into one magazine. But what does that do? It makes the gun fatter. It makes the grip fatter. It makes the magazine fatter. Makes it weigh more. Makes it harder to conceal. You'll also hear the term single stack. Single stack, pretty self-explanatory. The ammunition is in there, one on top of another, singly stacked. Kind of like if you think about single file. That makes the guns smaller. It makes them narrower. I mean skinnier, not necessarily, not always narrower, but in most cases narrower. It makes the grip smaller. It makes it easier to conceal. It makes it easier for people with small hands normally to shoot. Now, that's one reason why I like the Smith & Wesson M&P Shield, is because it's an easy gun to shoot, and it's fairly soft recoiling, plenty accurate for the task, but it's a single stack. It's also very easy to conceal carry. And that's one of the reasons why I really, really like that gun. The Springfield XDS in 9mm, not bad. Although, if you listen to last week's show, you know, I told you why I don't like to recommend that gun very often to new shooters. Maybe when you become a little bit more trained and you learn how to draw properly from the holster and get a proper grip on the pistol, then an XDS, a Springfield XDS, might be a good gun for you to consider. Okay, the main point that I'm trying to make here is to resist the persuasion from your friends, relatives, or even spouses to buy a certain gun. Resist that persuasion, please. It's a personal decision, and it's a personal decision that only you can make. And I'm going to talk to ladies here for a minute, okay? You know, ladies, sometimes your husband goes and buys you a gun. You know, ladies, if you're listening to this and you want to get a gun, tell your husband, boyfriend, or significant other not to go buy you a gun, that you're going to buy it on your own. Ladies, I got another question for you. Would you want your husband or your boyfriend to go buy a pair of shoes for you? Right? Would you want him to go buy a purse for you? Hey, guys, let me ask you a question. Would you buy a purse for your wife? Would you buy her a pair of shoes without bringing her along to pick them out? Okay? Then why would you buy her a gun? Okay, it's the same type of personal decision. Okay, would you buy your wife something that is that personal of a decision and buy it for her? And now let me talk to the guys. Okay, if your wife or your significant other is going to buy you a gun, give her plenty of suggestions. Okay? Because, and again, I mean, basically, ladies, if you want to buy your husband or boyfriend, significant other, a gun, a handgun, any kind of a gun, give him the money and tell him to go pick it out, rather than going and buying it, unless you're 100% sure that he absolutely loves that gun, and that you've seen him shoot it, and you've seen him try it, and he's good with it, and he rants and raves about it, and boy, how he wishes he had one. If you know that, then that's fine. But don't listen to relatives and friend of yours say, you need to go buy your husband one of these types of guns, because I hear they're really good. You know, one of the reasons why there are so many different firearms made today, so many different handguns that are made, is because there's a market for them. There are so people that have, you know, so many different needs and so many different requirements and different hand sizes and different tolerances for recoil and different abilities and so forth. There's a market for them. And what's nice is we have all kinds of good selections out there. Okay, so those are some things to think about. If you're going to be buying a gun for somebody else, rule of thumb, it's probably not a good idea. Let me also cover how to buy a gun. A lot of times, you know, you hear people talk about what gun to buy, but they don't talk to you about how to buy a gun. Remember earlier in this episode, I said you need to go rent some guns. Well, first of all, go to a gun shop, go to several gun shops, and just get the feel for some of the handguns first. And ignore what people say, again, ignore what people say about caliber, and ignore what people say about quality and their personal preference. Oh, boy, that drives me nuts. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm in sales. Okay, I've been in sales 30 years. And I'll tell you, I learned a very hard lesson in sales a long time ago. I wasn't very successful until I learned this lesson. It's typically not a good idea for a salesperson to inject their own personal feelings about a product, other than the fact that, you know, I mean, it's okay to inject a personal feeling, like, for example, you know, I would buy this for myself because of a certain maybe need that you have. I guess what I'm trying to say is I hear a lot of gun salespeople say, well, I personally don't like these guns, but, you know, If it's what you like, then go ahead and get it. Let me tell you why I'm against a salesperson saying that. Because they've just injected bias. Okay, they've injected their personal bias. And to a new gun owner, you could be really doing them a disservice. Because the gun that you don't like, Mr. Salesperson, they might really like it. Okay, but now you've just told them that a gun that they are really seriously interested in, you don't like. And they consider you the credibility source, or at least one of them. And now you may have turned them off because of your own personal bias. You may have turned them off to a gun that really works for them. So don't do that. So gun buyers, I'm going to tell you right now, be real careful. Be real careful when a gun salesperson says to you, well, you know, I personally really don't like these types of guns. But if you, you know, as soon as those words come out of the mouth, maybe you might want to go say thank you very much and find a different salesperson. Okay? Or at least just hear them out, be courteous, hear them out, because, you know, they are trying to do their job. I get it. Hear them out, be courteous. By the way, don't be mean. Don't be mean to salespeople. Folks, you know, those of us who are in sales, we get enough mean people. All right? And give us a break, okay? Most decent salespeople are trying to do a good job for you. But go to gun stores, go to gun shops, and try different guns in your hand. Just put them in your hand. Just put them in your hand. Ask the gun store clerk permission. And it's very important that you ask him or her permission if you can try the trigger. But before you start pulling the trigger on any gun, even if it's in a gun store, this is what I want you to do. The first thing I want you to do is keep your finger off of that trigger. The second thing I want you to do is pull the slide back and lock it open. Excuse me. I got that wrong. Second thing I want you to do is keep the muzzle of that gun pointed in a safe direction. In other words, treat every gun as if it's loaded. Keep the muzzle pointed in a safe direction. Don't point the muzzle back at the gun store salesman. Don't point the muzzle at the person who's with you, if there's somebody with you. Okay? Point the gun in a direction that is not at another person. Okay? If there's a rack of guns, you know, to the side of the salesperson, maybe keep the muzzle pointed towards the back of the store, towards those other guns. All right? Yeah, common sense will prevail here. You'll know what's a safe direction and what's not. I mean, remember one of the rules of using guns, one of the safety rules. Never point the muzzle of that gun at anything you don't want to shoot or destroy. So, treat it as if it's loaded. Don't point it at something you don't want to shoot. Keep your stupid finger off that trigger. Okay, and always know where that bullet might end up if a bullet accidentally comes out of that gun and you didn't want it to. Don't assume that because you're in a gun store or at a gun show that the gun is unloaded. Yes, there have been incidents at gun shows where somebody supposedly handed an unloaded gun to somebody that was wanting to buy it and they tested the trigger and boom! Guess what? There was a round in the chamber. Ask permission from the gun store clerk. And once you've observed all four of those safety rules, go ahead and try the trigger. And see if the trigger is... see how you feel about that. Try it several times. And do this with three or four different guns. You might want to take a notepad with you. Or if you do like I do and you make notes on your iPhone or on your iPad, make notes on there about how the gun feels, how the trigger feels, how easy is it to use. Ease of use is very, very important. Very, very important for a new shooter. Ease of use. Okay? Go to another gun store. Do the same thing. And repeat this over and over and over again, trying different guns each time, or maybe retrying a gun again the second time. Once you've narrowed it down to three or four guns that you like, okay? And your goal, by the way, in doing this is not to find the gun you want right away. Don't walk into a gun shop. And I'm sorry, I may upset some gun shop salespeople when I say this. I may upset you. but I've been in sales 30 years, and I trust me, I can take whatever is thrown at me as a salesperson, and you should too. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're a gun buyer, if you're a brand new gun buyer for the very first time, do not buy a gun on your first trip to the gun store. And do not buy the first gun you try. Don't buy the second, third, fourth, or even fifth gun that you try. Okay? Go to a couple different gun stores. I'm not saying shop price. I'm saying shop guns. You can shop prices later. If you're going to a gun show, that might be the exception. But if you're going to a gun show, go to several tables. Several of them. Don't go to one table, try one gun, and buy it. Because there's probably a 95% chance you're going to make a mistake. Okay? Make notes of what you like about guns and what you don't like about guns. And then, before you make any buying decision, call up some shooting ranges that rent those guns that you like, those three or four that you like, from going into a gun store and dry firing them and practicing, or handling them, not practicing, but handling with them and dry firing them and so forth. Again, observing the rules of gun safety. Then find a range, pick your top three or four and find a range that's renting those and go rent them and shoot them. Then you'll easily be able to make your decision. Trust me. You'll easily be able to make your decision. Then once you've got it narrowed down to one or two guns, then go back to the gun shops and see where you can get a good deal. And also, it's not only about price, folks. When you go to a gun store, it's not only about price. I am a huge fan of supporting your local gun shops. I am. I have purchased guns on the internet before from a non-local dealer. I've done that. But I'm a big, big fan of supporting your local gun shop. Here's why. It's a good idea to have a place to take the gun back to if it's not working properly. Okay? Most good gun shops will take care of that for you. A lot of them have on-site gunsmiths that might be able to fix it for you right there in their shop. If they have to send it out, they'll be normally really, really good about sending it out to get it fixed and worked on. Okay? The other reason I'm a big fan, and even if you got to pay $20 more, come on, folks, $20? Really? You know, why would you get on the internet and buy a gun from several states away from a dealer you don't know to save $20? Come on. Oh, but Bob, I saved the tax. Well, that depends on... I mean, yes, you do save the tax if you buy on the internet out of state. I get that. But if you're not talking about a lot of money, if you're talking about a $400 gun, how much is the tax? $30 or $40? You know, is that really worth it also? I don't know. You decide. If money's that tight, maybe so. Because, I mean, let's face it. I mean, I'll be honest. I'm always honest. You know, folks, I always. It's my goal to tell you the truth. I don't want to give you any kind of false information on this show. And people know me that if I do give false information, which means I make mistakes from time to time, I will correct them as soon as I possibly can. Because mistakes do not become problems unless you fail to correct them, and I will correct a mistake. But, you know, you can save money buying on the internet. There's no question about that. And many of us have strict budgets, really tight budgets. But support your local gun stores as much as you can. And even if you don't buy a gun from them, get magazines and ammunition from them. You know, I stopped today at Sparks Firearms and bought three magazines. Because, you know, magazines, that's not like buying a gun. Ammunition, that's not like buying a gun. Okay, and you know what? A lot of gun stores have some pretty good deals on ammunition. Sparks Firearms had boxes of 9mm for $14 today. And I just made a huge purchase of ammunition, so I didn't buy any today, but I might buy some next week or in a couple of weeks. You know, local gun stores right now, today, have some pretty good deals on ammunition. You know, could you save 60 cents a box buying it on the internet? Sure. Are you supporting a local gun shop by buying it on the internet? No. If that local gun shop sees you coming in there often, buying magazines, maybe buying a gun, buying accessories, buying ammunition, holsters, is it quite likely that you might get preferred service? Yes. So think about all that. And I'm talking to the new people. Now, you know, those of you who are experienced and been doing this a while, this might not apply to you. You know, you might know what you want. You know how to work on your own guns and things like that. But, you know, and all of the firearms manufacturers now, all of them have decent warranties. They all do. Everywhere from as little as 12-month warranties to lifetime warranties. And manufacturers don't put out junk. They don't want to put out junk. Well, okay, there's a few exceptions. There are a few exceptions. There are some guns out there that are just junk, but not very many of them. And most manufacturers don't want to put out junk, and they will stand behind their product. And that's what your local dealer is going to do anyway, most of the time. Unless it's something simple and he can fix it. If it's something that's major and your gun breaks in a major way, your local gun shop will probably send it back to the manufacturer, and the manufacturer will fix it under warranty. You know, similar to taking your car to a dealership. Of course, when you go to a car dealership, most of them have mechanics on site. Now, I am going to say something else that is also controversial and might make some people mad. For new gun owners, again, new gun owners, I'm also not a real big fan of you going to a big box store like a Cabela's or a Gander Mountain or a Bass Pro Shop or a place like that and buying your first gun. Why? Well, first of all, the prices are usually pretty high at those places. But here's the biggest reason why I'm not a big fan of that. You're typically not going to get real personalized service, especially if you have to take that gun back in there for service or even just to go back in to ask a question. But let's look at it from a service perspective. Most of those big box stores, they don't have a gunsmith on site. They don't. You know, in the San Antonio area where I live, almost all the local gun shops, specialty gun shops, they got gunsmiths on site. They have people on site that know how to do things like replace sights, replace parts inside of a gun. Okay? Fix magazines. Things like that. Fix triggers that are broken. Replace springs that are broken. Things like that, okay? And you're gonna have a hard time at a Bass Pro Shop or Gander Mountain or Cabela's. I'm not saying it's impossible, but you're gonna have a lot more difficult time. And even if you do save money, what, $15? Is that worth $15 to save? You know, okay, you get the point. Now, does that mean that I won't buy guns at those places? No, I have purchased guns at those places. But I'm not new. I'm not a new gun owner. When I was new, okay, the very first handgun I got was not from a big box store, and it was not on the internet. It was from a small gun dealer that I got to know real well, and boy, did they take care of me, okay, because I was green. I didn't know a whole lot about what I was doing, and they held my hand, and they nurtured me through the gun owning process, and that's what I'm talking about. Okay, well, that's pretty much the end of this episode. Hopefully I've given you some things to think about. If you are a new gun owner, and if you follow some of my tips on this episode, and you go out and you get that new gun, you end up getting a gun that you really, really like, and that really is really good for you, I'd love to hear about it. I'd love to hear your personal experiences. If you follow this advice that I've given you and it's terrible and it turns out to be the worst decision you've ever made, I'd also like to hear from you. Because, like I said, a mistake does not become a problem unless you fail to correct it, and I would like to correct whatever mistake I made. So there's lots of ways you can get a hold of me. You can get a hold of me on my voicemail, 210-646-1727. I'll warn you that I like to play voicemails on my show. So if you don't want me to play your voicemail on the show, then please be sure to tell me that. But again, the number is 210-646-1727. My email is bob@handgunworld.com. That's bob@handgunworld.com. I can be found on Facebook at facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast. I don't have commercials on this show, folks. I don't have paid sponsors. You probably noticed you listened to 98% of this show without having to listen to me or somebody else go on and on, drone on and on and on about products because they're sponsored by those product manufacturers. That is not me. The only way that this show gets supported is by generous listeners like you. One way is you don't have to spend any extra money. And, you know, I know you're saving your money to get that first gun because you're a new shooter. But I'll bet there's a good chance you buy products on Amazon. And if you do, I have an Amazon store, and I get some credit if you buy your products, your Amazon purchases, through my store. Just make the first place you go to handgunworld.com, Amazon store. Go to handgunworld.com, click the Amazon store link, and then make your Amazon purchases. And hey, guess what? Amazon will pay me, not you. How cool is that? The other thing you can do is you can get involved in one of the training classes that I'm involved in teaching. And I might be coming to an area near you with my co-instructor, Ben Branham, from the Modern Self-Protection Podcast. That's another one you should listen to, Modern Self-Protection Podcast, at modernselfprotection.com. So check the course listings that Ben and I, and we'll get 2016 up there pretty soon. But right now, for the rest of 2015, handgunworld.com. And if you like to watch educational videos, we have a great collection of educational videos. You know what? Don't sign up for our video membership until after you've purchased your first gun. Seriously. And you know what? You might think that that's weird. Here's a guy wanting you to support his podcast, but I'm telling you not to buy our video membership. That's what I'm telling you to do. Don't do that until you've got your first gun and you want to learn some things about it. Then sign up for our video membership called the Shooters Club. And you can find that at shootersclubmembers.com, or there's a Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. Okay, folks, thanks again for listening to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. I'm Bob Main, and remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight. Shoot safe, and I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.